Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the power of mindset and the numbers to call for coaching live on air. 866-254-1579. It's toll free. 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 001-760-918. 4300. So I want to just set the table for today, and I'd like to do it with a little thought experiment. So here's what I'd like you to do. Sit back, relax, and imagine that you've signed up for a six-week introductory class in whatever it is you'd love to learn. It could be learning a language, learning a sport, learning more about selling or marketing or networking or speaking with confidence or seducing members of the opposite sex or members of the same sex or making friends quickly and easy, whatever you want to learn. Just imagine you've signed up for a six-week intro class, and it's taught by an unquestioned expert in the field. And your teacher stands up at the beginning of the day and says the following: "Good morning, class. Today is the first day of our introductory classes, and I want to reassure you there's nothing for you to worry about. What we're going to be learning here today is something that you'll either be able to pick up easily or not. Each week, there's going to be a test to assess your level of ability. If you find that you can learn it easily, this class and the full course to follow is going to help you unleash and demonstrate your innate ability. If not, it'll allow you to move on quickly and find something you're more naturally suited for. You can sign up for the full course or drop out of these introductory classes at any time." Okay, so that's the opening speech. Well, how do you approach the class? How would you prepare for your first test? But more importantly, what conclusion would you draw if you did poorly on that test? And if you did, how would you approach the second class? And how long would you stay with that class before you made a decision about whether to sign up or drop out for the full course? Remember, this is something that you're interested in actually learning about. So just take a few moments to explore your answers to those questions. And when you've done that, I want you to imagine a different scenario. Okay? You've signed up for a six-week introductory class in whatever it is you'd love to learn, taught by an unquestionable expert in the field. But this time, the teacher stands up at the beginning of the day and says the following: "Good morning, class. Today is the first day of our introductory classes, and I want to reassure you there's nothing for you to worry about. What I'll be presenting here is a learnable skill. Each week, there's going to be a test to assess how far along you are in your practice. If you apply yourself, this class and the full course to follow will give you everything you need to master this skill. If not, you'll probably stay stuck at whatever level you currently find yourself at. You can sign up for the full course or drop out of these introductory classes at any time." All right, so let me ask you the same questions as last time. How would you approach this class? How would you prepare for your first test? If you did poorly on that test, what would you make up about it? And how would you approach the second? How long would you stay with the class before making a decision about whether to sign up or drop out? Now, I'm going to guess that you had different answers to those questions in the second class than you did in the first. And the reason is to do with the mindset that was being presented about learning. And this distinction I'm going to share with you comes from a book called Mindset, The New Psychology of Success by an author named Carol Dweck. And in the book, she shares the results of dozens of experiments that were just like that, where in each case, researchers deliberately influenced the mindset of the test subjects in one of two directions. So some people were guided towards what Carol calls a fixed mindset, where the results are unlikely to change over time and are attributed to innate talent or intelligence. And others were guided towards what she calls a growth mindset, which is a mindset where results could and would alter radically in proportion to your individual effort, the amount of energy you put in, how you apply yourself, the amount of focus you put on the class, and the amount of time that you spend. And the experiment that really stood out when I first read some of this research was children who received identical grades on an exam were divided into two groups. And the first group was praised for their intelligence, along the lines of, "Wow, 8 out of 10, you're so smart." And the second group was praised for their application, along the lines of, "Wow, 8 out of 10, you must have worked really hard." Now, to the researchers' amazement, and I got to say to my amazement as well, that the children who were told they'd done so well because they were smart, which is the fixed mindset, it's innate, you're just either good at something or you're not, they actually became reticent to take on further more advanced tests, and they were found that they actually would lie about their scores when other people said, "How did you do on the test?" the kids who were sort of focused towards the growth mindset and told that it was basically congratulated on how hard they worked, they were eager to take on the more advanced work, and they all told the truth about their scores. So, well, what can we learn from that? Well, for me, the first thing to be aware of is how relatively easy it is to predispose someone towards either mindset by the words you use to describe and explain the activity. So if you kind of are coaching your kid's Little League baseball team and you say, well, you know, some kids are good at baseball and some aren't, so let's find out. Well, those kids are going to come in and they're just going to make up that if they do well, it's because they're good at baseball. And if they don't do well, it's because they're not good at baseball. If you take those same kids and you say, hey, you know, we're going to see where you're currently at, and I'm going to give you guys drills so that you can become as good at baseball as you want to be, just by creating that mindset for the kids, they're going to learn more and they're going to increase their ability and they're going to do better. So if I want my kids and my clients and my friends and my wives, well, wife, to approach life with a growth mindset, it's really important to develop the skill of presenting possibilities and attributing the results of whatever it is that you take on to learning and to application, as opposed to, oh, well, you're just good at that. Now, here's the other thing that makes a big difference. We're going to go to the phones in a minute. If you want to get in, numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free, 866-254-1579, or from outside the United States, 001-760-918-4300. Here's the other thing to become more aware of. If you're stuck somewhere in a fixed mindset, you'll probably know, because you'll hear yourself say things like, well, I'm just no good at math. Yeah, I couldn't carry a tune if my life depended on it. I've just never been able to draw. I'm not artistic. Now, sometimes that might be an accurate assessment of past performance, of what you've done up until now, but it becomes really limiting when you start to use it as a predictor of future possibility. So a bit later in the show, I'm going to share more guidelines for noticing which mindset you're bringing to your projects and to your work. But for now, let's go to the phones. Let's start with Kent in Wichita, Kansas. Kent, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. This is Kent Noller, and thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
And I called because you're a super life coach, and I'm 68 years old, and now have retired from one position, been laid off, business closed due to the economic downturn.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking for a little coaching on attitude and based on your experience and your knowledge, possible directions, possible strategies that I might use. I'm in excellent health. I had come from a very long-lived family,
mm-hmm.
and I'm looking for a number of years of meaningful work, purposeful work ahead of me, if that's a possibility.
Yeah. And financially, what's your situation? Do you sort of need to find a job in the next 30 days, or do you have time to play around a little bit?
I've got a little time to play around. My youngest son is in college, and we're trying to help him at least defer part of his expenses, and we'd like to maintain our lifestyle if all possible. So, yeah, I would like to get into another line of work for a number of reasons, but financially also.
Okay. So let me talk just very briefly about attitude and mindset and things like that, and then let's address things directly. Attitude's one of those words. I used to really hate the whole idea of attitude. You know, people would tell me growing up, you know, you need to change your attitude. You need to me. And you know, I was a kid. I'm still pretty much like that. But then I kind of learned what attitude means. And attitude is actually rocket science. Attitude, the word, comes from the angle of approach of a rocket or a missile.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it'll be an attitude of 48 degrees. And what's interesting is when you think about attitude like that way, then it really makes sense why changing your attitude can make a huge difference. Because if I aim a missile, you know, 1 degree higher or lower, it's going to end up in a completely different place.
Exactly.
And so similarly, if I change my approach even a little bit, it's going to take me in a very different direction. So I think, you know, given that it's the topic we're talking about, one of the great attitudes to bring to a new project is a growth attitude, a growth mindset, which basically says, okay, you know, I either have or can develop the skills and the resources I need to create the result that I want to create. As opposed to, well, I'm 68, you know, can't teach an old dog new tricks. which is the fixed mindset, which basically says, this is what you got. What can you do with this? And you can see how if you went into, and I'm not even suggesting this is a what you do, but if you went into, say, an agency for work, and you know, you said, well, this is who I am, what you got, mm-hmm. you're going to have a very different experience than if you go into that same agency and go, hey, this is what I'm already good at. This is what I really love doing. This is where I've served people in the past. And, you know, I'm up for learning. Just that one shift, you're going to get a very different response. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. You bet.
Okay. So now let's talk specifically about you. You kind of asked, you know, well, based on my experience and things like that, what I think. Based on my experience, what I know is that when people begin to shift the search for meaningful work from, okay, what's out there that I can do? What are the jobs that I could fit into? To what would I love to be doing? How would I love to be serving? What people would I love to be making a difference to? What are some of the things that I would love to be doing? The whole thing shifts. So those are the questions I want to start with for you. So what do you love to do? In other words, if I was going to pay you for something, but you got to pick what that something was, what would I pay you for?
Well, my background is mostly in manufacturing and as an analyst, a process analyst, manufacturing process analyst, and my aptitudes were an excellent fit for that. I'm very analytical, very methodical, subjective, and so that has been a real good fit. Except that's something that usually only fairly large corporations can afford.
Okay, so I want to just point something out, yes. Which is that those are great answers to a different question.
Yes.
So those are the answers to the question, okay, what's your background and what's your aptitude? My question is, if I was basically saying, I'm going to pay you to do something, you get to pick what it is, what would I pay you to do? What would you, if you're creating your own job from nothing, because just you really, there's something you really want to do, and I'm going to pay you enough to do it that it'll take care, let you maintain your lifestyle and help your kids out and stuff like that. What am I paying you for?
I guess I would enjoy being of help in some way, shape, or form. I guess I've kind of had some fantasies of energy healing, coaching. A lot of my work was also teaching and coaching as far as teams and that sort of thing, and improvement teams, and that's where a lot of my education was.
Okay, and again, it's not that those might not be relevant things for other people, but I don't really mind where your education's been up until now.
Okay.
So what I heard, and you tell me if I heard it right, is if I was literally willing to just pay you to do something that is of value to the world, I mean, it doesn't have to be, I probably wouldn't pay to watch TV, but
exactly,
you know, so energy healing and coaching were two things that came up.
Yeah, that's, to me, that is huge. Whether you look at the national scene or individual scene, health is a huge issue for people in this country, and the ability to afford health care and so forth. And I realize that licensed health care is very important to people, but there's also an area that there seems to be a wide open field as far as helping people in the energy area and energy healing. And I think particularly of the young fellow Adam in Canada, Dream Healer, for example. And as part of my personality, I'm very intuitive, very insightful. And so that's
okay. So can you
I've had some skill at also.
Can you see how if we'd stuck with your first answer, we'd be sitting here brainstorming ways you might be able to get a new manufacturing job?
Yeah.
But the conversation we're about to have is about how you can begin to create a practice doing energy healing and coaching.
Exactly.
So that's that shift in attitude that's kind of going, okay, hang on, let's not make this about what we think we can get. Let's actually start with, well, what do we want?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we're going to create it, let's create something that we're really kind of inspired to create. So here's the next question, okay, is given whatever your current level of knowledge and skill with energy healing and coaching is, if you could serve anybody with it, who would you want to serve? Who would you want to do that kind of work for?
I relate well to all ages, and I really feel like there's a need. My wife is a physical therapist, and she works with young people. I see families with young people that could benefit from it. I see middle-aged and elderly every day that I feel could benefit from it if they really understood that the potential was out there. There is potential relief and improvement in their lives. And
so, Kent, bear with me. Because I'm just pointing out what you're doing it again.
Yes, sir.
You're telling me who could benefit. I'm sure every man, woman, and child on the planet could benefit.
Uh-huh.
If you could choose, so you're going to work with, let's say, 25 people in the next month. Which 25 people, you know, in other words, it's okay if the answer is, well, I don't mind. But if you could pick where those 25 people were going to come from, in other words, they could be 25 plumbers, they could be 25 kids, they could be 25 creative professionals, they could be 25 men, they could be 25. In other words, you got to pick. Who would you love to do the work with?
Well, it'd be the people with the greatest need.
Okay.
And I see middle-aged and elderly right now in our country, some of the greatest need, and families of low income.
Okay, great. So if I was going to offer you a job right now, and here's the job description. Okay, Kent, so I got a job for you. It pays just about the perfect amount for you to kind of maintain your lifestyle and, you know, continue to kind of help your kids out with college. But there's possibility for increasing that over time. And essentially what you're going to be doing is you're going to be doing energy healing and coaching for people in need, particularly the middle-aged and the elderly.
Right.
Is there a job you'd rather have than that?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, great. So that sounds like a good place for us to start. So my next question for you is, what would you need, if anything, to learn to develop in terms of skills in order to go out and start that job next Monday morning? So in other words, if I said, okay, you're hired, you start on Monday, are you ready to start, or are there still some skills you need to develop?
I think there is a self-confidence level, probably a self-esteem level, an enthusiasm level that... Once I'm into something, I have a very positive attitude, a can-do attitude.
Mm-hmm.
But it's making that leap of faith and getting out there and actually doing it and creating the environment, creating the opportunity, creating a situation that there can be some connection with people.
Okay. So I just want to clarify, if I already gave you the job, so you don't have to go out there and create the opportunity. You have to show up. Somebody will knock on I'm going to give you an office. Somebody's going to knock on your office door at 9 a.m. on Monday morning and say, hey, I'm ready.
Yeah.
Do you still need self-confidence, self-esteem, and enthusiasm, or are you ready to work with them?
I'm ready to go.
Okay, great. So then what right now it sounds like is the little block, the sticking point is, how do I create the opportunity to do that kind of work with people?
That's correct.
Great. So that becomes the project. That becomes the growth project to bring that growth mindset, that attitude to. Because essentially, things like that, that's a skill to be learned. And it's a skill that you probably haven't had to work on very much in your time, working in a manufacturing industry. Because the job itself kind of created those opportunities.
That's true.
Okay, so here's two things that I want to do. There's one specific piece of homework I'm going to give you, and then there's something I'm going to invite you to do.
Okay,
so
Michael.
So the homework is, what I'd like you to do is, I'd like you to write up a personal ad for your ideal client. You know, so it'll be, you know, I don't know the abbreviations, but, MWM seeks middle-aged and elderly people in need of hope, possibility, and energy for healing, you know, something like that. And it's just a way of really painting that picture as clear as you can in your mind about exactly what kind of work you want to be doing and who you want to be doing it with. Because our minds are these fantastic, if we give them a picture, they will head for that picture. They will try to create that.
Uh-huh.
It's just the way it's set up. So I want you to go ahead and create that so vividly that when you think about it, your mind goes, oh, you want that? Okay, got it. All right, that's the first thing. Will you do that?
Yes, sir. That's number one.
Okay. Second thing that I want you to do is starting, and I'm going to talk about this a little later in the show, but starting on July 1st, I'm going to do a 30-day interactive online coaching program called Creating the Impossible. And what I'm going to be asking people to do on that program is to create a project for themselves that they think is pretty much impossible for them to achieve in 30 days, but boy, would they love to.
That's exciting.
Okay, and so what I want you to do is I want you to send an email to radio@geniuscatalyst.com, and we're going to give you a free place on that program.
That's awesome, Michael.
All right, Ken.
That is awesome.
Fantastic, and I look forward to please when you've done it, go ahead and to that same email address, go ahead and send me your personal ad.
I will do that. I sure will.
Okay, and I'll look forward to touching base a bit later on and seeing how you're getting on.
Okay, thank you for your time today. I appreciate it so much.
It's a pleasure, Kent. You know, it's so often the case that we do as Kent did, and we answer the question, "What would you love to create?" or "What would you love to do?" with, "Well, I'm good at this." Well, people tell me I can do that. I did an aptitude test. I don't know if you ever did one of those aptitude tests in college. I did an aptitude. I'm supposed to be a forest ranger. Apparently, I am just like born to be a forest ranger. I actually think I would hate it, but I've got the aptitude. Just for fun, just for something different, I really want to encourage you to ask yourself this question. What would I love to do if it really was up to me? Who would I choose to work with? Because as you create that possibility in your mind, that possibility is created out in the world. We're going to hop back to the phones real quick. Let's talk to Mary in North Carolina. Mary, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, this is Mary Ellen in North Carolina. I'm so excited to talk to you. Huh. I actually have a recommendation for the gentleman that you were just talking to.
Okay.
I am in just about the exact same situation that he was, where I have a background in business, and I've always been drawn to healing and health. And I'm studying to be a lifeline practitioner with Darren Weissman, who is a Hay House author.
That's right.
And I wanted to strongly encourage him to check out the lifeline technique with Darren Weissman. And he is having...
Is there a website that people can check out?
Yeah, just have him look. He could just check out Darren Weissman. I think, I'm really surprised to be on the air. So I just didn't do any preparation.
Well, but, if it helps, we're going to have to kick you off the air in about 45 seconds because we're coming up on commercial.
Okay,
but what I'll do is over the commercial, here's what we'll do, Mary. Over the commercial, if you could look up the site. And you don't have to stay online unless you've got some. I'm very happy to talk to you in the second section. But if you phone back in with that, then they'll put that up on my screen and I can read it out on air.
Okay. Do you think I'll be able to get through when I phone back in?
I hope so.
Okay.
I think you will. Yeah.
I will personally help this gentleman with his journey if he comes to Omega Institute.
All right. Well, listen. That's go ahead and send me some info, and what I can do is I can pass that info along, and we'll let Kent decide what he wants to do with it.
Okay.
Oh, and in fact, somebody's just put in
infiniteloveandgratitude.com.
That's funny. It just came up on the screen. So
right.
Kent, check out infiniteloveandgratitude.com. Mary, thank you for your call. We are going to be back with more chat about mindset and more coaching with you right after this break. Bye bye for now.
918-4300.
Real strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about mindset, and we're talking with you. The numbers to call are, he said, realizing he's hidden the numbers from himself, 866-254-1579. It's toll free, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 001-760-918-4300. I mentioned when I was speaking with Kent in the first segment that I've got a program coming up in July called Creating the Impossible. Just want to give you guys a little bit more information about it. Essentially, it's going to be an interactive coaching program, and it's going to run from the 1st of July to the 30th, and all you need to have to enroll is an impossible project to take on this July. And that can be anything from writing your first novel to losing 30 pounds to getting published or earning $50,000. And here's the only prerequisites for your project. You got to believe you have a less than 50% chance for success in the 30 days of the program. Now, I know that sounds weird because you're used to kind of thinking positive and trying to no, you gotta be pretty sure that you can't succeed at this. But here's the second thing. You've got to be so passionate about what you want to create that you're going to be glad of any time that you spend invested in creating it, regardless of how things turn out. Now, I've got an impossible goal around the course. I'd like to have 1,000 people on it. And it starts on the 1st of July. So there's three ways you can sign up. If you're a member of the Solutions Cafe, you can actually do the course for free. And the Solutions Cafe, you can find it at geniuscatalyst.com. If you're a member of Steve Chandler's Club Fearless, and you can find that at clubfearless.net if you're not familiar with Steve's work, then you can also join for free from that club. And if you're not a member of either the club, and I highly recommend you would join the club, but if you're not a member of the club and you still want to do the program, then it's $99, and you can find it at geniuscatalyst.com/impossible. So it's going to be a lot of fun stuff going on that. There's going to be daily audio messages from me. There's going to be an interactive forum that I'll be on. We'll be doing action days. We can actually phone in on the hour and kind of go, okay, this is what I'm up to. This is what I'm after. This is what I plan on doing in the next hour. And they really help kind of build a momentum. There's going to be a workbook. There's going to be all sorts of cool bonuses as well. So if that's something that you're interested in doing, I really invite you to join me on that. But let's talk a little bit more about mindset. So, you know, I promised some guidelines for noticing which mindset you're bringing to your favorite or most important projects right now. So here's some of the hallmarks of a fixed mindset. And a fixed mindset, well, ability is innate. It's all about talent. You know, the question that you might be asking a lot is, well, how do I do this? You know, how does this work? The focus is on looking good or not looking bad. And sort of like the fundamental belief of the fixed mindset is the past creates the future. So I know whether or not I'll be able to do something based on what I've been able to do in the past. And again, within the fixed mindset, all of those things make sense. Well, yeah, if my ability is innate, then of course, I just want to do things to the best of my ability, and I kind of want to pick situations where my ability will be used well, and hopefully if I've got a useful ability, I want to market it well. But now let's just take a look at a growth mindset. See, in the growth mindset, the fundamental assumption is that skills are developable. They're developable, like speaking. So the idea is, instead of kind of it being about looking good or not looking bad, it's about learning and it's about enjoyment. And the question, instead of like, well, how do I do this? Well, what happens when I do it this way? What happens when I do it that way? And instead of the past creating the future, in a growth mindset, the future creates the present. In other words, what I do now is going to be based on whatever I can imagine creating. And I'm going to be informed about what choices I make now by what it is that I am in the process of creating in the future. My favorite example of this and how a fixed mindset can skew anything is in the original intention behind IQ tests. Now, I didn't realize this till I started looking into it, but IQ tests weren't designed as a measure of intelligence, as an innate character trait. Nowadays, we talk about, well, what's your IQ? And, well, he's a genius. And, oh, well, he's an idiot. And when the test was designed by a guy named Alfred Binet, and it's called the Stanford-Binet IQ test because he got together with some people at Stanford University and the Stanford-Binet IQ test was created. The original tests were designed as a way of evaluating which students needed extra help at school. So if you didn't do well on the IQ test, that wasn't a measure of your fixed ability. It was just a measure of your current level of ability in a developable skill. And Binet actually even warned that the score shouldn't be interpreted literally because of something he called the plasticity of intelligence, which is that when you use your brain actually changes. It actually, new connections get formed in the brain. You can become more intelligent. And there are a number of ways out there that have been proven to increase your intelligence, not just in the moment, but over time and permanently. And one of the ways of thinking about this is, in a fixed mindset, the way it is the way it is. In a growth mindset, the way it is the way it is until I create it differently. And one of my favorite bits of research on this, that Malcolm Gladwell's written a book called Outliers. And it's a fascinating look at sort of research into success and what it takes to succeed. And he certainly posits a lot of environmental factors as being kind of secret keys to success. But one of the things he talks about is he quotes some research from a guy named Dr. Daniel Levitin. And the basic notion is that it takes 10,000 hours of practice to achieve a level of mastery. As Levitin puts it, to achieve the level of mastery associated with being a world-class expert in anything. So that could be playing basketball, that could be writing books, that could be ice skating, playing chess, being a master criminal. 10,000 hours seems to be the sort of consistent number, and that's the equivalent of about 3 hours a day, 20 hours a week, over 10 years. Now, that doesn't mean you have to do it over 10 years. Doesn't mean you have to wait 10 years to get good at it. It's just to get to a level of mastery, the people that we tend to see around us doing something, we think, oh my God, they're amazing. I could never play violin like that. I could never draw like that. I could never act like that. I could never solve problems like that. I could never run a company like that. By the time we see them, many of them have already put in their 10,000 hours. And I was reading more about this on the web. There's a lot of cool things. If you type 10,000 hours into Google, you'll just find some cool stuff. And one blog I came across by a guy named David Sia had a neat little scale. And he said, okay, at 1 hour of practice of something, you know some basics. At 10 hours, you've got a pretty good grasp of the basics. When you've put in 100 hours of practice at something, you're going to be fairly expert. And at 1,000 hours, you're going to be an experienced expert. And at 10,000 hours, you're going to be a master. And, you know, you think about like pilots, you know, they log their flight hours. And the more hours they put in, the more responsibility they're allowed in terms of flying. And so, you know, 10,000 hours over 10 years sounds like daunting, but 1,000 hours, well, that's less than a year of full-time work. And 100 hours, well, you could do that in a few months on the side. And even 10 hours practicing something is going to make you significantly better at it. So I remember reading something that Anthony Robbins wrote years ago in Awaken the Giant Within. And he was talking about how he became a masterful speaker. And he said, while others in my organization had 48 speaking engagements a year, I would have a similar number within 2 weeks. Within a month, I'd have 2 years of experience. And within a year, I'd have a decade's worth of growth. In other words, 10,000 hours. My associates talked about how lucky I was to have been born with such an innate talent. I tried to tell them what I'm telling you now. Mastery takes about as long as you want it to take. So when somebody calls me and they say, I can't draw well, or I'm no good at sports, or I'm just not a writer, what I'll usually ask them is, well, how many hours have you spent practicing that? And it's really unusual if the answer is anything close to 100 hours, let alone 10,000. In fact, it's usually, I don't know, 3 hours. And if you think about it, that's the fixed mindset. Their implication is that their lack of skill is a lack of an innate ability, whereas the reality is it's just they haven't put in the time yet. And that's the point of that for me, is don't give up on something you'd love to do because you're not very good at it, because any worthy goal is going to succumb to an investment of your time and energy. And time is the one thing that we all do have the same amount of. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about that, but let's go back to the phones. Let's talk to Janet in L.A. Janet, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm a lot like your first caller. I'm thinking of going back to school.
You're 68, live in the Midwest, and just got laid off in the manufacturing industry?
Well, I'm 56.
Okay.
I live in L.A. I work in, I'm a textile designer right now.
Okay.
And I have a very great job, good pay, and very creative.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking of learning, I'm most interested in energy healing and along that line.
I'm spotting a theme.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
But the thing is, I'm also interested in psychology, and I'm thinking of going back to school, but I'm wondering if getting the psychology degree, official degree, so I can be licensed, if that is really important, or if I need to do that.
Okay, what is it that you'd... I'm going to ask you the same kind of question I asked Kent. Once you've got whatever it is that you wind up getting, what is it that you want to do with it? In other words, what would you love to be doing, and who would you love to be doing it with?
Well, I'd like to be working with people. I was answering the same questions you were asking him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to be working with people about my age and kind of with my concerns,
mm-hmm.
like to just get more out of life and have a richer, fuller life, and to not continue to carry baggage from earlier traumas
okay.
into your life.
Mm-hmm. So really helping people to be able to kind of, whatever age that they're at and wherever they're at, start again, start fresh.
Start fresh, move on, continue on. I like the way psychotherapy can help you break old behavior patterns. But then I think a combination of energy healing with the psychotherapy can be really a great practice.
Okay. So let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have kids?
I have one, and that is another part of it.
Okay, so I'm going to just use that as a jumping off point.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're, and you know, if there's issues there, then you know, it doesn't have to be your child, but if somebody that you cared about deeply
mm-hmm.
had the kind of problems that you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
who would you send them to see right now? What, if you don't have a person in mind, what kind of a practitioner would you send them to see? Or would you send them on a course, or would you give them a book? What would you do to help them if they were open to being helped?
I would send them to a psychotherapist that had energy healing ability as well.
Fantastic. And that was just a reality check, because you'd be surprised at how often somebody says, I want to train in this field. But when I asked them the question about who they'd send a beloved family member to, they'd go, oh, well, I'd never send them to someone in my field. I'd send them to something else.
Uh-huh.
So psychotherapist and energy healing. So I don't know enough about the healing world to know if there are any credentialings that are considered meaningful.
Yeah, I don't think there are.
In the psychotherapy mm-hmm. world, the mm-hmm. meaning of a credential, the importance of a credential is generally to do with legality. That if you are uh-huh. calling yourself a psychotherapist, and this certainly was true in the state of California last time I checked, you need to be licensed as a psychotherapist. And in order to be licensed as a psychotherapist, you do need credentialing.
You have to go to the right school.
Right. Now, so then the choice becomes, does it matter to you? And I'm not going to suggest that one way or another, but does it matter to you to be able to call yourself a psychotherapist because of who would be inclined to work with you because you're a psychotherapist?
I think that is the thing. I think I feel like I need to have the credential so people believe me or they'll listen to me.
Oh, okay. So hang on. That's very different. So
mm-hmm.
Great. I'm glad you said that.
Mm-hmm.
So there are two points to a credential. Now, I'm putting aside what you'll learn in getting the credential, because generally speaking, you can learn stuff with or without a credential.
Right.
So we're going to assume you're going to do the training to really develop your skill to a level where you can really help people and make a real positive difference.
Right.
With or without a credential. So then the two points of a credential become, one is a credential can act as a convincer for some people. So
right.
it they're more likely, if they're choosing between 30 people on a piece of paper, they're more likely to, if they're, it's a health issue, pick the one that has doctor in front of their name, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be useful like that, or as a sort of more often after the fact, if I'm sort of doubting whether or not to talk to somebody, oh, well, you know, before I've met them, that might be something that will get me in or keep me out the door.
Right.
The other purpose of a credential is, as I say, for licensing. If there's a legal consequence to being credentialed or not credentialed, then obviously credentialing matters in that sense. So the but here's the thing. Here's what I heard, and this might not be all of it. If you want the credential because you've got a concern that if you don't have the credential, people won't think that it's worth talking to you or that it's worth going to you, what I can tell you is I actually have over the years gotten some credentials. I started out uncredentialed.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had a credential that I was going to do when I first was learning NLP. I wanted to do a credentialing before I first started working with people, and I was booked to do a course that got canceled. And I wrote, it was in Holland, and I wrote to the people who put the course on to say, look, it's very important to me that I get some chance to get credentialed because I was doing this course for credentialing. And they sent me back a credential in Dutch and with a letter in English saying, look, we're sorry that we had to cancel the course. This isn't quite the same credential you would have gotten had you come on the program, but perhaps it will be of some use. And I don't speak Dutch, but even I could make out that it was basically a credential as the world's best beer drinker. But it was in Dutch, and it looked like a certificate, like, you know, that you'd put on your wall.
Uh-huh.
The point is, not on purpose, but what I learned when I started out is that my credentials were my clients. That once I started making a difference with people, the reason that people listened to me, my credibility, it came partly from inside me and from my knowing what I could do and being able to communicate that. But it came from the people who I'd been able to make a difference with. And so I didn't actually wind up getting proper credentials for several years after that, because it wasn't a legal issue in the field that I was practicing in, and it didn't make any difference to my ability to get clients or serve them. So I guess my question for you becomes, or the question I would encourage you to ask is, do I want this credential, as a legal aid? Do I want this credential because the course that I would most love to do anyways is a legally credentialed course, so I may as well get the credential?
Well, the answer to that one is probably no.
Okay, so that to me would be a key thing to play with.
Yeah, I think I have a kind of a hang-up because I don't have a credential that I feel like I need the credential.
Right, and I understand it. I've come across it before, and what I can tell you is it's a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the idea of start out uncredentialed and then get credentialed.
Oh,
if,
sure. I mean, look, I've got absolutely nothing against credentials.
Uh-huh.
I'm just saying that I see too many people think, oh, I can't do this unless. And while there may or may not, depending on where you are and what you're trying to do, be a legal argument that goes along with that, there actually is no other argument that goes along with that.
You know, that's actually what I have done in my life. I don't have a credential for what I do as a living, and I do make a very good living.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have this thing about people don't give me the recognition because I don't have that credential.
Okay. And I guess my thing, Janet, is I'm going to say that's not why they don't give you the recognition.
Uh-huh. It's because I don't have the confidence or something?
It's because for whatever reason, you're not putting yourself out there in a way, you're not creating yourself for them in a way that makes them go, ooh, look at that.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
And the second you start to do that, they will start paying attention. And the idea is it's because of the credential. I remember when I first started working in London in the NLP bookshop there at the time was called Changes, and I was probably 22, maybe 23. And we supplied psychology books for all of the universities around the United Kingdom. And somebody came into the office, and I was downstairs in the basement working, and they said, oh, somebody's here to speak to the NLP expert. And so I came upstairs, and this guy was like, do you remember the movie Flubber.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, with Fred McMurray, I think, you know, or the absent-minded professor.
Right.
You know, he looked like that. You know, he had the patches on the elbows, the tweed jacket, the pipe. I mean, just the archetypal professorial figure. And he took one look at me in my t-shirt and jeans at age 22 and said, "You have got to be joking." Now, sure, he was somebody who would have wanted to see my credentials.
Uh-huh.
But he was also somebody that I wouldn't have wanted to work with.
Right. That's another way to look at it.
So that's another way to think about it.
Uh-huh.
Listen, Jen, I want to grab another call. Thank you so much for phoning in. And let us know what you decide to do.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate that.
Okay. Let's go to Carol in Wisconsin. Carol, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
You're
welcome. I'm 54 years old, looking to make a career change. To get into the industry, like working for Michael Neal's, working for Dwayne Dyer's Louise Hay,
mm-hmm.
but don't know how to approach that, how to get into that industry.
What would you want to do in that industry?
And that's even the more specific that I'm trying to figure out for myself is how do I know what they have available?
Oh, okay. That's just not the most useful question.
How do I pinpoint it?
That's not the most useful question, because when you ask that, what you're basically saying is, there are a fixed mindset thing again.
Yeah, and I just heard that, and
okay,
I agree completely.
So instead of looking for what do they have available, what do you want to do? If you could write your own ticket, what would the job description be?
And again, I apologize, but I have to go back on previous experience, and that's the only thing that I base that on. I do enjoy working for people, and it doesn't really matter if it's in the sales capacity that I've done or in the business management organization that I've previously done. My main purpose and goal is to work with like-minded people who enjoy doing what they're doing,
okay,
and are getting out there and doing it, as opposed to where I'm working now. Then people say, "Oh, if I listen to Hay House Radio, they're like, 'Oh, you're listening to that mumbo jumbo.'"
I know. My wife says the same every time.
Okay,
she has a lot of other qualities I really like. So okay, so look, here's the thing. Make
so
a list.
It's basically just working with people that have the same mindset.
Great. So make a list of the 10 people you would most like to work for, of based on what you know, knowing that you can change your mind later if you meet them and go, ugh.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, based on what you know, okay, you know what? If I could work for anybody, these are the people. And approach them and say, "Hey, I want to be the person." Let me tell you how a friend of mine did it. I've got, I have a number of, you know, friends. I'll do this real quick because we're wrapping up the show. But I've got a number of friends who are gurus, as it were. And one of them was telling me about how he wound up hiring his right-hand guy. He said, this guy came to him and he knew him a little bit. And he said, "I'd like a job." And he said, "Well, I don't have any jobs." And he said, well, here's the thing. I want to be the guy who wakes up every morning and asks the question, how can I make your life easier and your business more successful, and spends my day doing that. And here's what I'd like to be paid, and here's the thing. And so my friend, the guru, said, well, okay, let me give you a try. All right, well, you can come on for 3 months. I'm not going to pay you what you're asking, but I'll pay you something. And in 3 months, you know, show me. And this guy more than showed him.
Uh-huh.
And is now working at the original salary that he asked for full-time in that capacity. And he created that. He created that through his intent to serve and his focused target of who he wanted to serve. So that's the same offer I would make you. Pick your top 10 and just go in there and see what you can create and have fun with it.
Okay, very good.
All right, Carol, thank you for phoning in. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Steve and Joe in the studio for keeping us on air. We're going to be back with another brand new show next week. And again, if you want to check out Creating the Impossible, the place to go is www.geniuscatalyst.com/impossible. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye for now.